Okay, we're
Love
here.
Hope Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
And welcome to the Green Egg Five Rivers Radio Hour. I'm Ariel Montserrat, and this is
and
my co-host.
I'm Michael Gorman.
Yes. And this is the first show that's being revived. I think we went off air about a year ago, and we've now added the Five Rivers Bardic Arts nonprofit to our title because Michael Gorman is with the Five Rivers. And Michael, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I don't know. People know me. Know that my my philosophy and spiritual path is based in the Celtic world. And one of the things I love about the Druids, who were the educated class of the Celts, is that they understood that if you wanted somebody to be a truly educated person, you had to start them off in the arts. And you know, it took me a while to get to that. That you know, real change in the world happens through people's hearts. And so, more and more, I've gotten more involved in the arts community here in Sacramento and wanting to encourage new and bohemian and cutting-edge artists. So we were already doing stuff. I live in a big house with a massive yard, and we started doing house concerts and art shows and everything, and it just kind of segued from that into a nonprofit. We're a subsidiary of a nonprofit called the Chrysalis Institute, just outside Yosemite in Mariposa, California. And their goals are exploring sustainable living, honoring the land and the arts, and as using the tribal Celts as their model. So we're kind of part of the artistic part of that, although we also do stuff with gardening and sustainable living and stuff. So anyway, I hope some of that made sense. I just finished drinking a cup of coffee. You know, when they gave the thing about the views are not necessarily views of the radio station, it's like with our sense of humor, you can't always count on the views being the opinions of the artist of the hosts either.
You're right.
Anyway, so
yeah, and while we recommend a mature audience, we don't guarantee that we're going to be mature.
Exactly.
What's that thing about growing up is not optional? No, it's like maturity is, or something like that.
Peter Pan has always been my patron saint. You know, never going to grow up. Going to keep flying around with the fairies.
Well, we have today, tonight it's just going to be Michael and I talking so that you can know a little bit about us and our background. And we also wanted to let you know who we're going to be having on in future. Next week we have an interview with Janet Farrer and Gavin Bone, and it's going to be pre-recorded. We just finished doing that this afternoon and had great fun doing that. And the next week after that, we have Taylor Elwood, who is the managing editor of the Scholarly Works section of Emanion Press out of the UK. Very magical gentleman. We had him on the show about a year and a half ago, I guess, one of the last shows we did. And he's a very magical man. Well, then in April, we're going to have Oberon. And Oberon Zell Ravenheart talking about his new book, The Witch and the Wizard, which I happen to be in. And everybody in the world has gotten their copy except for me. I'm waiting for my review copy, so I have no idea what has been said about me or what has not, or, you know. Anyway, so, and then we also have, we're going to be interviewing a member of the Yanomami tribe in South America. They had no contact with civilization outside of their own until, I think, the 1950s. So do you want to tell us a little bit about him, Michael?
Yeah, actually, his name is Davi. He's the shaman from the tribe, the primary shaman from the tribe. And as more contact happened between the tribe and the Western world, you know, he realizes that there was a lot of misinformation out there about the tribal people, and specifically about his tribe. And so he started doing speaking, started writing, and he's become really a voice for the indigenous people in South America, in the Amazon Amazon rainforest. And one of the things I love about it, well, there's two things that he advocates for is preserving the rainforest and supporting the indigenous people. And one of the things that he says, which makes so much sense, is if you want to preserve the rainforest, you want to manage, let the people who know the rainforest the best do the management. And he's referring to the tribal people there. So he's just been wowing people all over the place. He's been nicknamed the Dalai Lama of the rainforest. So I'm really excited about the interview that we're going to be doing with him.
Oh, I am too. I can't wait. It's going to be interesting. What it must have taken for him just to get outside of the jungle where he's lived all of his life.
Yes.
Get
yes.
on an airplane and come to San Francisco and, you know, wherever else he's going. These people are totally desperate. They want no contact with the outside world. And, you know, I believe in the right to be left alone. And if this isn't like a yeah. perfect example, it just embodies. These people are having, you know, they have their land. It's been set aside for them. They legally own it. The government's supposed to protect that land and them, but they're not. And developers
right.
are coming in and ripping out trees and whole pat swaths of trees in the jungle and destroying their land. And because of this, they're getting all kinds of diseases that they hadn't been exposed to before, and they're dying off. So their numbers
yeah.
are getting decimated, and they are desperate. I mean, I've been reading about this, and so this is going to be, I think, just a really wonderful, wonderful thing. They still have had very little contact with the outside world.
You know, we talk in neo-paganism all the time about our connection to the land, but mm-hmm. you just expressed how when you really are living on the land, how deeply that connection goes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the rainforest is suffering, and they're suffering right along with it because that is that's their ecosystem, you know. But we need, instead of taking advantage of them, we need to learn to reconnect to the land the way they're connected. And so that,
yep.
you know, we're not going to be so quick to chop down trees if they're, you know, if they have spirit in their family and it's going to affect us, which it already does. It's just most
yeah.
of the Western world doesn't get that. You know?
Yeah.
It's
amazing to me most people have no clue about indigenous tribes. They have no idea what's important to them, how they live, what they believe in. They just think of them as jungle
right.
savages because that's what we were told in Bible school or wherever. And it simply isn't true. And I've been to Brazil. I spent time in the jungle there, and it's extraordinary. There's nothing like it. There's absolutely nothing like it on the planet. It is so different. You can feel Gaia's heartbeat, and you can feel her there. It's alive and full of life and full of lots of noise.
And you're talking about millions of years of evolution to get this amazing forest to where it is, and if we lose it, you know, we're not going to be around for it to come back. You know, it's going to take
yep.
thousands and thousands and thousands of years to get anything close to it, and you know, we just need to protect it now.
And there's something like over 20,000 herbs that are known to the indigenous tribes in the Brazilian jungles, in the Amazonian jungles, and they know each one, and they know what to use, what different things to use them for. And over 20,000.
Yeah, so if nothing else, enlightened self-interest, we need to be listening to the indigenous people. Now,
yeah.
I wanted to mention that when we were talking to Janet, you remember that the
mm-hmm.
Subject of the tribal people came up. And one of the things that Janet and Gavin are talking about, it's playing out in my research, and I know, Errol, you get this,
mm-hmm.
Is that we have been lied to about the tribal people and the tribal way of life. And you
mm-hmm.
start looking at the tribal people from South America, from Africa, the tribal Celts in Europe, the Native Americans here. The cultures, because they get their wisdom from nature, are extremely similar. You know, so
mm-hmm.
if of all the people out there that should be advocating for this tribe and for the rainforest, it should be neo-pagans out there, because if we truly are connected to the land, then we're connected to every group of tribal people on the globe.
Well, my belief is that, you know, paganism came back or was reinvented or whatever, but really took off in America in the 60s with the baby boomer hippie generation, which I'm proudly a member of. And
did you say baby bloomers?
Baby bloomers, yeah. Hey, we bloomed. We bloomed. Yes, baby bloomers, yeah.
Well, you know, some of my generation that sold out, I could feel comfortable calling them the baby bloomers.
Baby bloomers, really.
You'll learn something and we can talk.
But my belief is that we all came back to be here at this most critical time on Earth. Never before have we actually faced the possibility of human beings becoming extinct. I mean, not in recorded history anyway. That's what we're up against.
You know, and I've noticed even among liberal friends who are very much environmentalists, there's still this really prevalent patronizing attitude toward the Earth, like if we don't save it, the Earth is going to die. It's like the Earth isn't going to be just fine. You know, we're going to leave some scars, but we're going to lose our place on it is what's going to happen. You know, we're dirtying our own ecosystem, and of course, she will have to do a lot of repair for a very long time. But the biggest thing is, like, we're just not going to be here anymore.
You brought this up, Michael, because I have to say, I'm not entirely on board with that. The planet will be okay. Because of what we're doing to it, and most people, 99% of people don't have a clue what's being done to the planet. But I will tell you, because I live in up on a mountain in Tennessee in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, I don't go out to the movie theaters. We don't have one in town. And so what do? I get to do research. I get to do lots and lots of research and reading. And what I learned about 3 years ago, I went outside onto my front porch, and we have a 180-degree view of the Clinch Mountains, mountain ridge after mountain ridge. It's beautiful. And I looked out, and we can see pretty much the whole sky, the whole entire sky.
Wow.
And I saw these giant white X's in the sky, and they spread. And as the day went on, as the hours went by, it's spreading more and more and becoming overcast. And, you know, people have been telling me, there are chemtrails out there. They're spraying chemtrails. And I didn't believe it. Well,
when I
saw that, there was no way. Those are not contrails. I was a flight attendant for 6 years. I know what contrails look like. I mean, I grew up seeing them in the sky as a kid. Those aren't contrails. Contrails last a few seconds. These linger in the sky and hang there. And if we keep our windows open at night, my husband Tom wakes up with a bunch of gook in his eyes and in his congested sinuses, and his nose is congested, and he can smell the chemicals that they're spraying. All right? There's a lot of good websites out there on chemtrails. The best one I have found is called geoengineeringwatch.org, and it was started by a guy named Dane Wigington, who's a biologist, and there's lots of information on there. I will warn you, it's not happy reading. It is not happy reading at all. But what
the Earth is going to be fine, what I mean is she's going to go on. Of course, she will be unrecognizable
to us,
what she is now, because we will not be able to live in the environment.
This is what I'm getting to. I looked up and saw there have been people that have also noticed the chemtrails. They've had their water and soil tested. What did they find? Enormous amounts of aluminum in the form of nanoparticles, which means it can pass through your blood-brain barrier.
Right.
Barium, and I think cesium or something is one of those. But what is strontium? Strontium. These things will kill you. And there's talking about spraying sulfur dioxide. They do that and all life gets killed. That's it, period. End of story.
Right, right.
But I noticed this past week, because we live on 10 acres of woods here, and we have a huge, I called him the grandfather tree. He's about 150-foot tall hickory tree. It stands by himself, right out as you look out over the mountains. Very dramatic. I love that tree. I love him. And I go to him and ask for wisdom. And I started looking around, and I noticed a lot of our trees, all of a sudden, the bark is falling off of them, which means they're open to insect infestation and disease and all of that stuff. What's happening is our trees are dying. And every year since they've been chemtrailing, every year we have fewer and fewer and fewer leaves. And we've got trees dying all over the place. I can't garden outside. I have to do it in a greenhouse. I cannot garden outside because if I do, they're also spraying modified molds, which is horrible for gardening. And in the summer, instead of having lush green around here, we have everything's yellow with a fungus. And all the trees are yellow with black spots on their leaves, okay? Our planet, they're killing the planet is what they're doing. And I could go on and on and on about this, but I won't because that's not what I wanted to talk about tonight. But our planet's in trouble. And scientists are already predicting there's going to be mass human extinctions by 2030.
I was going to say the frightening thing for us is that, you know, the Earth finds ways to cleanse herself, and it's getting to where in order to cleanse herself, she's got to get rid of us.
Yep.
You know, so everything else doesn't die off. We just need to realize that we're not disconnected from our ecosystem. Duh. You know, we can't live that way. It's not rational.
No.
It's not real. Okay, now that we've been gone to a real bummer, stuff that needs to be said, and I'm looking forward to when we get to interview Davi to get into some of the wisdom that he knows about the forest and how to save it. So tell me about your journey to get to paganism and to get where you are now and with the Green Egg. I mean, you're sort of in the middle of this amazing maelstrom of new growth in the old ways, and I want to know how you got there.
Well, let's see, I've been pagan almost 20 years. I was... You know, I have always been a big reader, and I read something that sparked my curiosity, and I thought, you know, I grew up Christian, like most pagans, and the part about sex never worked for me, because to me, it's like, that's how I experience a deep connection to spirit, is through the act of sex. And I was looking for a paradigm. Okay, I got the right idea. What do I put this into now? You know, what religion has this? And like 2 days later, I'm in a one of those big mega bookstores, you know, Books, Borders, and something. And I'm walking past the magazine rack, and this magazine jumps out at me, and it's called Green Egg. And on the front, the very next thing, right underneath Green Egg, it says, "Sex and Spirit." And I thought, damn, that's exactly
awesome.
What I'm looking for. I didn't even open it up. I grabbed it and bought it and went home, read it cover to cover, had my mind blown. And in there was an ad for Ancient Ways, which was, it's no longer happening, unfortunately, but it was a big, major pagan festival at Harbin Hot Springs up in Northern California. And so I went to that, I think, in 1996, and I saw Oberon do a ritual, and met Lasara Firefox, and oh, I don't know, and all kinds of people. And that's, you know, right then I knew I was pagan. So a year or two later, I go back. I went to the next year, but then the year after that, I think, is when I met you, Michael, at Ancient Ways. And, you know, we just ran into each other and started talking and became friends. So, that's what happened.
Pretty much,
anyhow.
Yeah. You know, if anybody doubts about that, our view that life is cyclical, I mean, there's like circles within circles. I love it.
It does, doesn't it? Really. And anyway, how I started Green Egg, I met my husband through Oberon, and Tom and I got together, and we moved out here. We were living in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. We moved out here to Tennessee 9 years ago, and we wanted to buy some land, and it was affordable here. And it's a beautiful, wonderful, lovely place. And I have spent many, 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 many hours observing the wildlife here, of which there's a lot, but it's getting less and less, as I mentioned before. And the winters here, you know, it would get down to like 0 degrees, and it wouldn't get above 10 degrees for like 6 weeks in the winter. It's warmer now, but when we first moved here, it was like that. And one cold night, I remember, one year
after you got there, you and I were talking, and you were talking about the weather. And I said, God, I know what you mean. Here in California, it's so freezing. I actually had to wear a sweater yesterday. And I don't think we could say what you said to me back.
I don't remember.
Anyway, keep going. The winter is.
Well, anyway, so it's one night late in January. We're sitting in front of the fire. It's freezing outside, and I thought, damn, I wish I had something really good to read, you know, like a good Green Egg or something, you know. And then it hit me. Hey, I could do Green Egg. And I looked at Tom, and I just knew he was going to say, have you lost your mind? But he didn't. He got excited, and I thought, oh, God, we're in trouble now. He's going with my harebrained idea. It's out there now. I can't take it back. But we talked about it, and we talked about it for several days, and we decided this is something we wanted to do. So we wrote up a little proposal and sent it off to Oberon, and he said, hot damn, you bet. I'd love to see Green Egg back. You two are just the people to do it. So that's – now, I had never published anything, you know. I've always been 100% perfect proofreader for grammar and spelling and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that part of it was a real snap, but – you know, basically, it was really, I mean, Green Egg had been out of print for 7 years, and it was almost like building it from the ground up. You know, the only thing we had was its reputation. And we'd also, in those 7 years, lost some ground. So there's a lot of young people that don't know about Green Egg. So I'm trying to get the word out about that. And what our next project, we just got back into hard copy print, and all the information's up on our website at greeneggzine.com. But the next project is we're going to get all of the old Green Eggs from 1968 right up until 2000 on scanned in on disc and on disc, and then we'll have those available for everybody. And
that's going to go into my research library.
That's going to be a long project. We figured out today there are, almost 10,000 pages that have to be scanned.
Whoa.
And the magazines are at Oberon's, and I'm here in Tennessee, and so we're trying to work out the logistics. It's a lot more difficult than you would think. And to have somebody do it is like $1.19 a page. Yeah, well, that's $10,000 minimum. So, and I don't think we could raise that kind of money, you know?
Anyway,
we're working on it. I just want everybody to know we are hard at work on it and trying like hell to figure out, you know, how to get this done. And it's not like, you know, if Oberon ships all of the Green Eggs here, what if they get lost? You know? We'll have to go back and try to find all those missing issues. It's a mess. So, but once it's done, it will be done. And that will be amazing. It's an important part of pagan history, I think. It's a chronicle of pagan history, really.
So, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been a strong tie with paganism and scholarship for a long time. You know, we can't afford to lose that history and have to reinvent it again.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I just want to also say that Michael writes for us. he was one of our first writers. He was the Cantankerous Celt. And now he's doing, he has a column called The Druid Egg, which is in, so you had a column in this new issue and then the one before that, right?
Yeah.
So look for Michael's regular columns. Michael is a beautiful writer and writes from the heart. I always cry whenever I read your writing, Michael. And this most recent article, you know, getting wisdom about economics from the tree, you know. I mean, it sounds weird, but if you're a druid, this is what you do.
The crying thing, there have been twice when I got a phone call where I felt completely successful. There's a woman here in town who's been a lesbian activist since God was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this thing, and I sent her a copy to review it for me. She's also done editing with newspapers like I had. And she calls me and says, damn you, Gorman. I'm like, what? She goes, I am a tough dyke, and I don't cry.
and you make me cry.
And I meet you.
Weeping and gnashing of teeth, I feel successful.
Exactly. Well, you know, you're the kind of writer whose job it is, I think, to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. You know.
I like that. I think I'm going to put that up over my desk. Right next to the sign that says, "Beware Attack Artist."
I have one that says, "I'm not young enough to know everything," which is a quote by Oscar Wilde. And
yeah.
It reminds me not to get...
It's hard to be writers these days because Oscar Wilde and Mark Twain got all the good quotes. There's nothing left for the rest of us.
I know. My two favorite writers, really.
Oh, yeah.
And they are, by the way, Mark Twain, they have now released a book of his, kind of
his
like
biography.
A diary, I guess. And he wanted it specifically. It was not to be published until like 100 years after his death.
Right.
And
I tell people I used to have the complete works of Mark Twain, and I haven't bought his biography yet, so I no longer have the complete works.
Well, I've got to get the biography too, because what it is, this one that wasn't published, you know, for so long until recently, he talks about that he was an atheist. I mean, he pulls out all the stops, you know. He did everything but come out of the closet as gay. And he didn't want any family members to have to take flack over this. You know what I'm saying?
Over his views, yeah, yeah.
So that's why he did it that way, which is pretty thoughtful and pretty wonderful, too. It was a smart move because people would be more accepting of all those things now than...
I'm sure some people
know.
That know Mark Twain would say, "You mean he wasn't pulling out all the stops before?"
Yeah.
Okay, now
really.
Now I definitely
oh no, there's more stops. Yeah.
I actually bought a copy for my son, but I haven't bought a copy for myself yet.
So Michael, when I met you, I remember you were just starting classes with the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids,
uh-huh.
And which I'm signing up now. I'm going to take their course. But anyway, how did you come to paganism?
Circuitously. I always tell people I was raised pre-Vatican II, Mass in Latin, Bones of the Saints, Irish Catholic.
Yep,
I went to the Catholic school founded by the first native-born American saint, Elizabeth Ann Seton. Although she wasn't a saint yet, we were constantly being told to pray for her canonization. And when I was a teenager, I rebelled against my Catholicism and became a born-again Pentecostal, speaking in tongues, fundamentalist Christian. And then I came out of the closet.
You know, it has a way of doing that to people, doesn't it?
yeah. It's like, wow.
Fundamentalism
so turned
you gay.
Fell apart. I lost my family, except for my son, who is like the most amazing kid in the world and stuck by his dad. I lost every friend I had in the world and basically got chucked out of the church. When people ask me when I left the Christian church, I tell them I didn't. It left me. And so for a while, I was so angry at the way that I was treated. I mean, these people would reject my son, who was like 5 years old at the time because he had a gay dad. It was a lot of ugly stories to go along with that.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty devastated. I was pretty angry. These are people that have, you know, promised to love me and, you know, until the end of the world. So I decided I actually tried to find churches that I found a partner. It was about a year after the divorce, and I started looking for a church that would accept us as a family and accept me as a gay man. And, you know, I'd be on the phone to five different churches, end up crying and then picking up the phone again and trying again.
Aww.
And it just sort of confirmed my anger. So I just decided I was just going to be non-spiritual, which lasted about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
that's not
yeah.
me. So like you, I had by then, you know, set down some things that in a spiritual community that I was not going to compromise anymore. One of them was I didn't want to be a part of a spiritual community in which women weren't completely equal to men, which really narrowed things down. Thank all my female friends for, like, you know, oh, that cuts out a whole lot that I don't have to look at.
That's the only one you had left were goddess worshippers.
Right, and I was not going to be a part of a community that, on a personal level, said there was something wrong with me because I'm gay, and on a broader level that doesn't accept the incredibly magnificent diversity of the human population and the natural world. And so, you know, I tried Buddhism. American Buddhism was pretty close to what I was looking for, but on an international sense, they're still trying to deal with, you know, the new attitudes toward gay people and also the place of women. And so it's like, no, I can't go there. I just can't do it anymore. I just, you know, women have always been, you know, I've always adored my female friends. I mean, that's something that a lot of gay guys have in common. I tell people one of the great ironies of life is that the men who love women the most are not sexually attracted to them. That gets me totally from my straight buddies. But anyway, so I just search and search, and my son and I, when he was, it had been a while. He was probably about 10 or 11, and we had gone up to Lake Tahoe to go to a picnic for a former student of mine. I taught for a while at Riverside Community College, which is a very conservative area, and a lot of women whose husbands were not allowing them to go to school figured creative writing sounded pretty innocuous, so they let them come to my class. Mm-hmm. And I taught there for 3 semesters and caused 4 divorces because these women would go, wait a minute, I'm a person and I'm married to a jerk. So one of them followed us back to Sacramento when we moved back up here. And anyway, it was her birthday, and I'm sitting at this picnic table making shish kebabs. My partner at the time put on a new Enya CD, and there was a song on it, Shepherd Moon. And I don't know if it was absolutely new at that time, but it was new to us. That one song came on that has that's sung in Gaelic, and it's got the baron, the drums in the background, the Celtic drums.
Mm-hmm.
And Mac, my son, was walking down toward the water to talk to his to hang with the other kids, and I just froze when I heard those drums. It was just something inside of me. Just it was like this earthquake, and I looked over, and my son had stopped in his tracks. It was just like a cartoon, and he slowly turned, and we looked at each other, and I shrugged my shoulders like, I don't know, but I got to find out, and you know, so I found out that Enya, you know, was honored in the pagan community. I started investigating it and went online and found Obod. And actually, I started, my first pagan experience was with a gay male group called the Radical Fairies, which I'll tell you a million stories about that at one point. But then, you know, at the time, the Radical Fairies were all gay men, which was a safe place for me at the time. But again, it was back to, you know, I need to have women here, you know. So I started branching out, and that's when I found Obod and started investigating my Celtic ancestry. And so it was basically the Celtic drums that brought me to paganism. I think the thing that confirmed when I started searching about the Druids historically and found out that, you know, the Druids were called walkers between the worlds because whenever they saw a duality like, you know, light, darkness, male, female, us, them, their job was not to, like, choose sides and fight the other side like we do in this culture, but was to walk between them, understand both sides, and put them together as a whole, kind of like the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
And so they were referred to often as the walkers between the worlds. Then I read a little bit further, and it says, so it's most likely that when a kid showed signs of being gay in the Celtic world, they were a special one born walking between the worlds, so you sent them off to the Druids to study. And I'm reading this going, hey, wait a minute. I'm not only not bad, I'm special, damn it. Nobody told me it's been my own tradition. I was so pissed off. It's like, oh, man, all this self-hatred, and I'm special.
It's welcome, you know, home. Welcome home to your beautiful self.
It was like coming home. It was amazing, and I have savored every moment of being on this Druid path. It's not dogmatic. You know, there's not only tolerating differences, they celebrate differences. In fact, they talk about if you're not different from somebody else, you're doing something wrong because we're all this wonderful, diverse patchwork.
Yeah.
It's like everything that I dreamed of in my heart when I was a little kid sitting in the Appalachian Mountains about spirituality was right there, and it was my own tradition. It's one of the reasons why I've been passionate about writing about the history, because there are too many people that don't know this amazing heritage they have.
Which brings me to your book that you've written. However, we need to take a little break and right now, and when we come back, we're going to ask Michael to talk about his book on Celtic history called The Philosopher's Stone.
Celtic Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, The Celtic Philosopher's Stone, not Your Father's European History. And so, anyway, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to play a song. It's called Serve, and it's by Kenny Klein. And if you were listening at the very beginning of the show, you heard the first few chords of that song. So now we're going to play it in full for you.
I didn't know.
Lord.
And that was Kenny Kline with his song Serve. And I'm sorry, I don't know what CD that's from, but if you go to his website, you might find it. And we will have Kenny on the show on April 3rd, and he'll be talking to us from New Orleans, where he lives. He'll be telling us about pagan aspects of Mardi Gras, which should be very interesting. And he's always a good interview. We had him on the show when we were on the air last time. So anyway, back to Michael, to your book. Do you want to tell us what your book's about?
It's interesting, speaking of things just happen in cycles. We were talking earlier in the show about the indigenous people and the wisdom of the indigenous people. And, when I started studying the history of the Celtic people, I realized that the Roman Empire, which was eventually gained control of Europe toward the end of the Golden Age of the Celts, called the Celts barbarians. We called the Native Americans savages. We called the Africans primitives. And one of the things I learned is the reason that abusive language is directed towards the tribal people is that if people really knew what the cultures of the tribes were like, we would look at this system and go, okay, enough of that. Let's do something reasonable. This system is invested in keeping us ignorant about our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I've gotten to lecture about the Celtic world at colleges because the real history of the Celts has not been told. The only mention in our history books, they were the Romans called them the Galli, hence Caesar's Gallic Wars. He made war against them. But if you listen to Western history books, the Galli, the Celts, just sort of appeared out of nowhere. Caesar made war against them, defeated them, and then they disappeared out of history again. That's all you ever hear about them. And anyway, when I lecture, I always start asking people, so what do you know about ancient Europe? And they'll say, well, there was Rome. I'm like, okay, Rome. And there was Greece. Okay, Greece. What else? And then I get these blank stares. One time somebody mentioned Vikings, which really is kind of more of a profession than a people, but, we're aware of the Nordic people. I said, I said, Greece and Rome, okay, you guys just accounted for two peninsulas in the Mediterranean Sea. Did you ever wonder what was happening in that huge landmass up above them? And you get these looks like, wow, I never thought to ask. It's like, was it empty? What was going on? And people don't realize that at their height, the Celts reached from Portugal to Turkey, from the Mediterranean to northern Scotland. They were this vast, huge tribe made up of sub-tribes. I call them the tribe of tribes. They were the people who invented iron that changed the name of the age. The broadsword that the Romans were so proud of was made by Celtic blacksmiths and metal workers. They were taller than the Romans because they mined salt and they knew how to preserve food and they had a balanced diet. It was this incredibly cultured people, but because Rome and Greece couldn't understand how you could have a culture of people where things like women were equal and you lived on the land instead of in the cities, they just didn't understand them. But they were so advanced that during the time of Pythagoras, he of the Pythagorean theorem in math, the teachers in Greece were doing student exchanges with the Druids, who were the educated class of the Celts. Pythagoras was one of those students that went to study under the Druids, and he got in trouble when he went back to Greece because in Greece and Rome, women were property of their husbands. In the Celtic world, they were absolutely equal under the law. And when Pythagoras came back from studying under the Druids, he started a school for women. And everybody's like, no, we didn't want you to learn those liberal social ideas of those Druids. We just wanted you to learn, astronomy and math and stuff. But here you've got a culture that was the center of education at the time. The libraries in Ireland are the reason we know anything about the ancient world because the Celts valued those things and preserved it, and nobody knows it. If people have any kind of European background, they have Celtic blood in them. And people don't know, well, I'm from Spain, I'm not Celtic. Like, guess again. The Danube River over by the eastern countries in Europe is named after the mother goddess Danu of the Celts. So I just, when I started learning this, I was like, somebody's got to tell this history. I mean, I can't believe for like 2,000 years, this major part of European history has been completely left out. And it was because of Julius Caesar. He understood that if people knew the tribal culture, that Rome would look bad. And so everywhere that Julius Caesar defeated the Celts, he burned their libraries. You know, I hear people talking about Rome being the height of civilization. It was Julius Caesar who burned the library at Alexandria, one of the greatest libraries in all of history. You know, they didn't want people educated because it would make Rome look bad. And also, you know, the Druids taught everybody universal education. In Rome, it's like, no, you want to keep the poor people poor and ignorant, so they keep doing all the work and sending all the money to us. So it was a direct attempt and almost the most successful attempt to completely wipe out a culture on the part of Rome. And what Imperial Rome didn't do, the Roman Church came back. So that's why the libraries in Ireland were so important. Every library in Europe was burned and replaced by ecclesiastical libraries. So anyway, I'm passionate about this piece of history because there's so many of us who could get so much from it, and it answers so many of our heart's desires, and we don't even know it's there.
It's at the root of so much of Western. It's the root of Western civilization, really.
It is
more
it
than
is. I tell people,
Greece and Rome.
Rome, the height of civilization. When was the last time you went to a music store and looked for the Roman section? The Celtic section's there.
Hey,
you know, the Celtic music has affected us. The Celtic dance has affected us. The Celtic education system has affected us. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much more civilized can you be than one of the first or the first culture in Europe to practice universal education? Women were absolutely equal under the law. There are only two generals that ever defeated the Romans. One was a Celtic female and one was a Celtic male. I mean, Boudica was, you know, and I have this sort of fantasy thing in my head of some Roman guy looking at a Celtic guy and say, you know, tell your woman to get in line. And the Celtic guy looking at me going, you tell her, I'll watch.
Yeah, really.
You will lose your head in 2 seconds. You know, and the Romans used to warn each other about the female Celtic warriors. I mean, they would say, you know, you can't scare the male Celtic warriors by telling them you're going to kill them because they believe in reincarnation. It's no big deal to them. If at all possible, just stay away from the women. We don't understand them. They don't play by the rules. They're really scary. So just stay away from them.
I love it.
You know, and the Celts didn't, in pre-Christian times, they didn't have a professional army except like small groups that were more like, you know, National Guard or police force. Everybody went to war when a war was happening because everybody was protecting their, you know, their territory and their homes and their families. And you get a bunch of women out there who are protecting their families and their kids. It's like, you know, they would run bare-breasted out into the battle, and when the Roman soldiers would look down, their heads would be gone before they could ever look in their eyes. You know?
They'd
say, whatever it takes, we're getting these guys out of here. So.
Well, you get a woman on PMS who's got children, you know, that'll do it.
I wonder if they ever thought of that. It's okay. Like, wait for that time of the month when everybody's in a cycle together. And
yes, exactly.
That would be a terrifying army. God, that's so sexist. But
now, that's just volume one, right? This is a three-volume set.
Yes.
Just volume one is the only one out now. When's your volume two coming out?
Volume one is Not Your Father's European History. Volume two, I'm working on a play on an Irish revolutionary right now. And my next project after that is volume two. Part of it's written. I've been collecting information and writing about it for a long time. But the volume two, what I'm going to do, because people tend to know, well, yeah, history, dismiss it. But what I'm doing, and it's been a very long study, I'm taking the cultural paradigm of the Celts, not necessarily how they live day to day, but the underlying social philosophy of the Celts, and delineating it and all the things that they believed in and how it affected their culture. And then I'm holding up side by side by the Greco-Roman system, which is what we're living under right now, and comparing the two. And it's, I mean, there have been times during this research where I'm looking at the Celts, this practical, nature-based way of looking at the world, and I think about our Roman system, I'm like, what we've been believing, like, you know, there's two sides to every story. How many times have we heard that? And we go, yep, two sides to every story.
Yep.
It's a multidimensional world. There aren't two sides to anything. Nothing.
No, there's a hell of a lot more than two sides.
Everything is multifaceted, and yet we believe it because somebody told us that, and they just keep repeating it until we believe it. You know, the linear way of thinking, that there are no lines in nature. It's all circles and spheres and and
crooked lines.
You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff that we believe in this culture, and I'm beginning to understand why Caesar didn't even want people to know about the Celts, because you hold them up side by side and go, Yeah. Why would we be doing this one all this time? Let's go to the rational one over here.
You know, years ago, Oberon and I went to Europe, and we went to as many museums as we could possibly find. And he's a wonderful person to do that with, because he's not only an artist, he also knows the history of all of these different mythologies of the people that did all of this art. So we're in the Louvre,
right?
And we're going through, and you can see side by side they have beautiful Greek sculpture. They're like 6 feet tall. They're human-sized, and they look like they're breathing. They are so graceful and just beautiful works of art, and they look human. And then right next to it, you look at the Roman thing, and it leaves you just empty. It's harsh. There's nothing graceful about it.
Yeah.
And you can see right there the difference between the Greeks who loved beauty. Well, not all of them, not Sparta, but, you know,
right.
Certainly Athens, and then Rome, who was just a very, very patriarchal, boy, I'm having trouble with words today, culture.
A lot of what Rome has is their art. They basically took from the Greeks and didn't reproduce it, and not very well. The Greeks are interesting because they're kind of they were the ones that coined the word Celtic. It was became originally from a Gaelic word, became the Greek word Keltoi, spelled with a C, by the way, for those of you in Boston.
Celtic.
There is no soft C in Gaelic. Anyway, digress. They looked at the Druids, recognized their prowess as philosophers and teachers and researchers and medical people. So in that sense, they were much closer to the Druids, and yet they still had this, like, patriarchal culture where women were not equal and where the education only belonged to the rich. If you go back further in Greek culture, you get something closer to the other tribal people. You go far enough back.
Right.
So they're kind of this really interesting halfway point between the Celtic world and the Roman world philosophically. But they definitely honored the Celts, but they couldn't understand how you can have a civilized culture where you teach everybody and where women are equal and where you don't have a hierarchical, patriarchal government. They're like, how do they do it? And yet somehow they do, you know? Instead of, like, lying to everybody like Caesar did, they said, well, they do it. We just don't understand why. So they use the word Keltoi, which means the hidden ones, to refer to the Celts. Because, like, yeah, they're a great culture, and we have no idea how. We just don't get it. So
masterful magic behind the scenes or something, yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, that's what the second book is. I'm not sure. It's also going to be a Celtic Philosopher's Stone, so it'll be searchable when it gets up. But it's basically comparing the two cultures. And then, because you always hear this when you talk about the past, like, oh, you want us to go back and wear animal skins and live like they did? They didn't wear animal skins. They were amazing weavers and made clothes that were the envy of Rome.
Yeah.
If you wanted to impress your friends in Rome, you got Celtic clothes.
What's wrong with wearing leopard skins anyway? I mean, well, of
yeah,
course,
I know,
it's
I
like
know.
You have to kill a leopard, but I mean...
But the third book is going to be taking the Celtic tribal cultural paradigm and showing it how it can apply to contemporary culture.
Uh-huh.
So that I can, you know, say, no, this is not about living the way they lived 4,000 years ago. This is, like, understanding what they understood about the world, about nature, about our relationship to it, about how to live peacefully with each other. You know, we have this heritage out of Europe of a culture that lived, that, you know, lasted for at least 2,000 years, 4,000 years, according to some scholars, sustainably on the land, with women being equal, fairly, you know, relatively peaceful compared to the warrior cultures like Rome, and nobody's telling us about it. We have a precedent, a historic precedent for all the things we're looking for in civil rights and social justice. It was there, and
we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And
no.
I'd like to say that I haven't had a chance to read this book. I've started reading the book. I've almost up to the. I've read about the first third, and before Tom. Literally grabbed it out of my hands and said, I have to read this. I can't wait any longer. I'm just dying to know. So he read it, and for 20, it took him 24 hours. He didn't do anything else. He read that book for 24 hours, and he finished it, and he said the exact same thing I said when I got to about page 4 of the book, which is, Michael needs to win the Nobel Prize for this. This is something that could change the entire planet. This helps us know. I mean, we've already got this wonderful model. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can use that one, and we can begin a whole new world, you know?
Yes. And it's been done. And it lasted, Rome in its height, or Roman cultures have lasted, you know, maybe 500 years. What, in the case of England, maybe 1,000. But this is a culture that lasted for thousands of years, answering the things we long for.
Yeah.
You know, your compliment is warms my heart. Part of me, and I, you know, being one of the first, there are other scholars who are getting the stuff and starting to search into it, but I feel like I'm privileged to be able to tell a story that just has been there and hasn't been told for a very long time.
Well,
when I teach Druidry, one of the most common comment I get from students is, wow, you know, this is just amazing stuff, but I feel like I'm not learning something new so much as remembering something I forgot. That's what it is. We need to remember what we forgot as a species, as a culture, as, you know, because it's all there, and we can do it. We have in the past,
We have.
Even though I'm kind of passionate about it, but, you know, we can really, truly, honestly change the world. I'm hoping that it spreads enough in recent years that we'll have one of those accelerated periods of evolution they talk about, because we could. You know?
That's what I'm hoping. And so I'm doing my part, you know, I want to get the word out. This is a really important piece of work, and particularly for pagans, because so many of us are of Irish descent, but then also, as you said, stated earlier, if you're from anywhere in Europe, pretty much, this is going to be, you know, we go way back when. This is the root of Europe.
You know, one of the things, when I think about you, Ariel, is I think about part of the tribal consciousness was that you can't waste anybody, that everybody has a talent that they apply. And, the Druids were kind of out there in the front and traveling around, and everybody knew who they were. But if it weren't for the families that sponsored them in the town when they were traveling to teach people, the education couldn't have happened. If it weren't for the people there wanting to learn, it wouldn't have happened. The tribal consciousness says you can't waste people. That's why they didn't have, you know, massive prisons. It was all about rehabilitating people. And your work is...
The music's on. Our time is up.
I got to say, your work is making all of this get out there, and I love you for it. Okay.
Join us next week when we're going to be interviewing Janet Farrer and Gavin Bone. And can we announce what's happening for them on Wednesday, Michael?
Yes.
Okay. You heard it here first, folks. All right.
Yeah.
We were told that they're getting married this coming Wednesday. They're getting legally married, Janet and Gavin. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you heard it first on Green Egg Five Rivers Radio Hour.
Here we go. And so it's time for us to sign off, and I'm going to say my usual goodbye of good night, Tom and Aubrey, wherever you are. Tom is no longer with us on this plane. He listened to every single show for a year and a half, or for 2 years, when we did the last radio show, and a very fine pagan man. So with that,
and
I will
say goodbye. It's about the journey, folks. Journey well, and you don't have to worry about where you're going. You will get where you need to be. Just do the journey well.
Yeah, the destination is the journey.
Yeah.
We'll let you figure that one out for the next week.
It's cyclical.
Okay, well, good night, everybody. Good night, Michael. Good night, Tom and Aubrey.
Good night, Ariel.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to Decide for Yourself. I'm Clint Croucher. Got a great information-packed hour ahead. Stephen Robinson, human rights activist and co-founder of Because We Care Butler County, joins us for a little mock segment I like to call Q&A, The Truth About the Federal Reserve. Then later on in the hour, community activist, motivational speaker for Awakened Cincinnatians, Carlton Brown joins us for some enlightenment to some of his great contributions to the group and our community. We're all Awakened Cincinnatians here on the show tonight, and we encourage each and every listener to find a local Awakened group or to create one of your own. We feel that the fight happens not on Facebook or blogtalkradio.com, but out in the streets through standing together and reaching out to others. We can create solutions. No time to waste, so I'll jump right in. We got a lot of big news not really being covered. It would be funny if it wasn't true, but in all actuality, folks, it's not really funny. I want to get serious about this. The lack of responsibility, the complete failure in trust, the enormous fail to report the truth to the American people. Yes, I'm talking about the mainstream media. Has it really come to this? Must we really rely on media outlets to obtain the true conditions that we currently live? To find out the truth about our military's actions abroad? You know, not only that, but most Americans don't even know that there's a revolutionary movement that has begun to grow here in the United States. And it's so sad to see the effects of the manipulations and the control tactics working so well on the American people. I mean, how many people are aware of the events of last Sunday when the protesters were protesting outside of Washington, D.C.? You know, we had some great stuff there not being covered by the mainstream media, and the person has to really wonder why. Why is that, that they would keep such information under wraps? You know, there's a lot of questions that can be answered looking into such things. You know, dozens of Keystone protesters arrested at the White House, you know, environmentalist rally and pretend to be dead on black sheets symbolizing an oil spill, as they rally in front of the White House and call on President Barack Obama to reject the Keystone XL oil pipeline in Washington, D.C., you know, March 2nd, 2014. And how many people really heard anything about this? Because the mainstream media does not cover exactly what it should, or what the American people deserves to get from their media outlets. I mean, you know, you see examples all the time when the covers of Time magazines vary from country to country. You know, you will see important news and news about our actions abroad on Time magazine in other countries, and then you got Justin Bieber or something along those lines on the cover here in the United States, and one has to wonder why. Why is that? Why wouldn't we, you know this? You know, of course, the police arrested dozens of young people protesting this as the demonstrators fastened themselves with plastic ties to the White House fences and called for the U.S. president to reject the controversial oil plan. you know, and people aren't hearing about this. People aren't hearing that the people are standing up for their rights and their concerns on humanitarian efforts and community projects to try to reach out and make these differences a reality. We're living in times today where, you know, the people really are starting to count on us to do this, because nobody else is going to do it. Nobody else is going to step up and do what needs to be done. We need to take this to the streets, and we need numbers, and we need credible information. You know, we have to dig through these piles of misinformation and misdirection and these tactics that they use, and try to get to some truth about what's really going on here. You know, how many Americans really fully understand and are aware of the consequences of being at odds with Russia? I mean, this is in the news some, you know, the mainstream news, but it's all basically slandered towards us doing the right thing, or that we think that we're doing the right thing by trying to intervene or place sanctions against Russia for its actions. In all actuality, isn't this kind of hypocritical? I mean, isn't this kind of the same thing that we did when we invaded Iraq? It was John Kerry, Senator John Kerry, that spoke and said that, he doesn't believe that anyone should invade a sovereign nation on false pretexts. Well, that's exactly what we did. How arrogant and how hypocritical is that to assume that the American people won't catch on to things of that nature, and we won't realize how arrogant and how above the law these people have become that are up there running our constitution, government. One has to wonder what makes us support some cruel and inhumane dictatorships and invade others. I mean, it really begs the question. When you got statistics like 21 military operations on foreign soil in 20 years and nobody bats an eye, really? Yeah, people have to start realizing that we are an empire, we are a regime, we are spreading false freedoms, the freedom and the illusion of democracy, the illusion of a two-party system. There's so many things that, that we need to address, and this is what it comes to, people. Yeah, really, nobody's going to change things unless we stand now. Be the change that we seek in the world. I believe we can. Together, you and I, wherever you are and whatever you're doing with your lives, listen up. We need your help. The world, it needs us. We got a job to do. The responsibility to forge a better world is not no one's but our own. Together we can, my friends. Together we can. Okay, we're getting close to time to have our first guest come on the show. His name is Stephen Robinson. He's a good friend of mine. He's a fellow activist here at Awaken Cincinnatians here in Cincinnati, Ohio. We actually stay in Hamilton, Ohio. Excuse me, one moment. We're actually good friends. It seems like maybe he's not coming on. Is there technical difficulties? I think we might be having some technical difficulties, or he hasn't called in yet. So let me try and find out what's going on here with that. In the meantime, I suppose I could just talk a little bit more about what else we got lined up in the show later on after the Q&A segment. We can talk about Carlton Brown, who is a community activist, community organizer, motivational speaker and educator, fellow Awaken Cincinnatian as well. He'll be on. He's got a lot of information that he wants to share about upcoming events and upcoming charities. him and I will be working closely together to start another nonprofit organization besides the Because We Care Butler County and the good stuff there, good stuff there.
Hello, you've reached Stephen Robinson. Leave me a message with your name and number, and I'll get.
Okay, we are having technical difficulties. I'm going to go ahead and try to wing this without Stephen. I'm not sure what happened there. I talked to him moments ago. I'm not sure if he's getting the wrong number. He does not have access to Facebook at the moment. And I am unable, obviously, to try and call Stephen. He's saying that he can't get through. I'm seeing that here on my message board now. I'm going to try to resolve that in the meantime. I can continue here. Well, I'm really not sure what to do here. I guess I will just try to continue without him.
Why don't you give a little background of you, yourself, Clint, while we wait for him. I tried to call him, and I got the answering machine.
Okay, I think there must be some kind of problem. He is either taking the number down wrong, or I'm not exactly sure what the problem is. He's sent me a text message here saying that he can't get through to the show. I can wing it here probably a little bit longer. If you would like to contact, I know you have the number there. I'm sure that my second guest is able to fill a little bit more time. If you want to go ahead and try to contact him.
I did. That was Clint. I left him this number. So the show number again, in case he had it wrong.
Okay, and you're talking about the first caller or the second one? You called both?
No. I called the first one.
Okay, that's what I said. The second one, Mr. Brown.
Carlton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Carlton Brown. If you could go ahead and try to get him on the line. I'll continue things here. He'll definitely be able to fill a lot of time. He's a great speaker, motivational speaker. I apologize to the listeners for this inconvenience. There seems to be some kind of a technical difficulty here, and I was afraid something like this would happen on the first show. But hopefully we can move past it and continue. I definitely have a great second guest, and he, we've sat and talking on the phone for upwards of an hour. So we're going to go ahead and try to get him on early. I'm sure he would be interested in talking about the Federal Reserve as well. We could continue a little bit with some of the Q&A on the page here if we get lucky enough to get him on. In the meantime, go into a little bit about myself. My name is Clint Croucher. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, actually right outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. And my intentions here is basically just to give an avenue for people and in the community for activists. You know, I hope that this turns into quite a big deal locally and on the web to get information out that people deserve to know, one, and for two, to actively get people organized and working together on causes such as homelessness and poverty and just exposing corruption.
Okay, Clint,
we have
Carlton.
Excellent. Carlton, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
All right, we had some technical difficulties here with my first caller. He was supposed to call in. I'm not sure if we got our signals crossed or what happened. You know, sometimes you just cannot prevent the unseen. We tried to schedule everything out. I actually spoke to him just moments before the show started. He wanted to remind me of something that I was supposed to say, which I already did. But, so I'm not sure what happened there. He text messaged me and said that he couldn't get through, so I've either giving him the wrong number, or he's taking the number wrong. I'm not sure what the situation, but so I'm glad that you could come in and you know, gives us the opportunity, you know, because I see every problem as an opportunity, it gives us the opportunity to elaborate some more with you, you know, and that's fine by me as well. How are you doing tonight, sir? Are you enjoying the warmer weather?
Yes, sir. What I did was I woke up this morning and I found a reason to be grateful and let it come out in my actions.
All right, man. That's the way to do it, and that is the way to do it.
If for a moment here,
I could persuade you to play along here for a little bit here. I want to do a little
Absolutely.
Bit, at least get some of the information out about what would have been my first segment here on the show.
Yes.
And that's about the Federal Reserve Bank. I know you're probably educated in that area as well, as many of us are, because I've always said that, you know, everybody asks me that, where do you start? You know, and when somebody comes to you who's unawakened and they're, you know, they are looking for information, you know, and I always think, you know, the best place to start is with the Federal Reserve, because there's a lot of viable information that is very credible, you know, about that. So, you know, that brings us to a point to where that's a good starting point for people, you know, because once they've researched into the Federal Reserve and start to realize, you know, how the wool's been pulled over their eyes, you know, so to speak, and it helps them to grasp other things once they start here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just want to point out a couple of facts real quick, and then I'll turn it over to you, and we'll go ahead and give you a little better of an interview than what you would have gotten. A lot of people don't know that the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned banking cartel. It really is amazing how many people don't know. The Federal Reserve is not a government agency. It is no more federal than the Federal Reserve or the Federal Express. You know, so it's not a government agency. You know, the truth is that it is a privately owned bank, and it's owned by the banks that are members of the Federal Reserve System. And we don't actually know exactly how much of the system each bank owns, because it's never been disclosed to the American people. So really, one has to question that. You know, we have to wonder, why has that never been disclosed? Why is that not a transparent system? It's responsible for so much and has so much power that the American people, in my opinion, you know, deserve to know. And in fact, you know, the Federal Reserve openly admits that it's privately owned, and it was when it defended itself against Bloomberg's request for information under the Freedom of Information Act, the Federal Reserve stated unequivocally in court that it was not an agency of the federal government and therefore not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. So that makes you wonder.
I know the whole process on that. I mean, as far as how it was started to be implemented and the legislative acts and the representatives of our Senate and Congress in the District of Columbia have set up this great format based on just two or three sentences out of the Constitution of the United States of America and created this elaborate system just from a few words.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Americans, unfortunately, don't even understand, you know, grasp the full reality of it, you know. In all actuality, it's just a perpetual debt machine. I mean, as long as the Federal Reserve System exists, the U.S. government debt is going to continue to go up and up. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. You can go to YouTube, and you can go in the search engine and look up Mr. Rabbi Finkelstein. There's an interview with him, and he tells you who owns your financial system. He tells you who set up the rules to your financial system. And he said, as long as you owe, all you can do is pay the interest. So every American thinks that his money goes in to pay taxes and then the money spent on the American people. No, the money goes back to the Federal Reserve, where they pay the interest on the money that they owe on a consistent basis, and it's constantly growing. They continue to borrow more and more money. And not only have they have the American people in debt, but they got our children's children in debt, because we will constantly be playing a private entity. Because
yes,
the only reason, go ahead, the only reason that you would keep it a secret about the financial dealings of our money is because you're doing something wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
and wouldn't it be nice to be able to create money out of thin air?
Oh, that's what they do. Because
wouldn't it be nice?
Oh, it's absolutely nice. It's doable. They print money, but there's nothing to back up the currency except the workforce of the people. See, everyone signs a birth certificate, right? And your birth certificate and your census report and your Social Security number are bought and sold on Wall Street at the stock market. They're based, the financial worth of their money, based on your life work expectancy. That's why they keep talking about raising the retirement age, because their money isn't any good unless they can back it up with a resource. And the resource is the people. See, Rabbi Finkelstein tells you, as long as you don't own your own institutions, which you think you do, he said, you don't own anything. He said, we own all the financial institutions that loan you the money. You owe us.
Uh-huh.
You work for us. They put on things on the TV telling you how great you are. All the images of these people and this and that. And the only way that you can rule a majority, the only way, you have to separate them in their thinking. Jobs, education, religion, neighborhoods, schools, even the type of clothes that you wear. All of this is done subliminally. They tell you subliminally is when they put things on TV and it's words behind it. No, it's the images that you see. Then you output them in your action, being unaware. That's why they advertise products, and you drive past McDonald's, and then all of a sudden you think, wow, I want McDonald's. But you don't know where that idea came from.
Well, that was the breakthrough. They come through with the breakthrough that they realized that through radio and television they could play on our emotions, and that we would make emotional buys. We wouldn't buy or consume because we needed these items. We would buy and consume because we wanted them. And they knew how to make these items appealing to us.
Yes, sir.
To play on our animal instincts.
Yes, sir. And also, how they implement these laws from state to state is they take the immunity law from the Constitution. They create tort acts in each state, right? And they take the clauses from the Constitution, the original document, not the state document, right? The original document, and they use the Tort Act to pass different laws and give themselves different rights as the corporation. See, they deem the corporation to be the same thing as a human being. The corporation has more rights. The corporation owns the police force, owns the military, owns the laws that are propagated to the people. That's why they have lobbyists, so they can go in, give them money, fund their campaigns or whatever, and have them vote in their favor and not the people.
Oh, right.
The
well, in their minds, they own you and I.
Yes, yes. And see, on my next segment, when I get more into the immunity clause, it's going to be more clear. Every person, see, in order for you to coordinate something, and it's got to be something that's widespread, right, that is a scripted goal. You have a tort act in all 50 states of the United States and anywhere in its jurisdiction. There is a tort act, and each one has to enact one individually. but they use different words in order to get them implemented. If you go in there and read them, do you know that a corporation, a financial institution who helps run this country, they can sell you a product that kills your child? The Sovereign Immunity Act has been remanded in the state of Ohio and other states to where they put a cap on what their accountability is. They're constantly receiving the immunities of sovereign countries.
Yep. And a lot of people don't know that D.C. is not part of the United States. Many people get stunned when they find that that it is its own sovereign entity.
You cannot sue the government. You cannot sue a government official. You cannot sue any of them unless they give you permission. It's in the Tort Act. Period. They have to give the court permission in order for them to allow you to sue them. That's how, see, sovereign immunity was never meant for the government to have immunity and have a blanket check to not be accountable for its actions. Never. It was meant for an embassy, or when they go to a foreign country, or a foreign country brings an embassy over here, that means you are not subject to the laws or the Constitution of the United States of America. That means if you assassinate somebody, you're not even charged with a crime. There's an investigation, and nobody has to tell you what happened because there's an investigation that could go on for years. That's why they always say, well, you know, they're not releasing information yet. It's an investigation, but they don't tell you the truth behind all of it.
Exactly. And the truth is so hard to come by. I tell you, because I've investigated, you know, for so long, and what I find is that there's a lot of misinformation, and there's a lot of activity, you know, that seems to just try to smear us as domestic terrorists.
Yes, see what they're doing. See, in the Constitution, the original document, forget the state document. If the state document is not in adherence to the original document, that means you can challenge it and get it overturned. See, there's a clause in the Constitution that says the power originally falls back to the people, right? Any legislative act acted by a state or by the Senate or Congress, says that, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. By the Senate or Congress, that you can create a petition if the people agree, right? And you can turn it into a referendum and bring it up for a vote, and you can change any law, ordinance, legislative act. Just because the legislature passes something does not make it written in stone. But there's one option that makes it all void. If you can separate the people where they cannot be one voice, an agreement to take action. See, the clause was put in there so that a dictator could not take over the country of America, because that's what the British and French did, right? It was put in there to protect us. But they know that if they divide us and we cannot even agree on walking down the street together or smiling at one another or looking at one another or going to dinner with one another, that it is impossible for us to come together to challenge what they do.
Exactly. And that's a very good point, because, you know, it really is, they hope to divide and conquer. And
that's what they're doing.
It's happening. It's definitely nothing new. People think that
it's a
new tactic.
Yeah, no. See, they taught our parents to teach us certain lessons, right? Now the people don't even have to think about it. They output it in their actions.
Yeah,
no matter what
arrogant.
They feel, think, or believe. I mean, it's like if you try doing wrong for so long, you don't even have to think about how you're doing it. You just do it right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's on autopilot until you change your mind. Yeah, it's on autopilot. And we can change our mind anytime we want to, because united we stand, but divided we fail, period. The Constitution protects us only if we use it. There is no law the Congress passed. There is no law that the legislature in Ohio or this council of Ohio that the people cannot come together. The state constitution even has it in there. The power originally falls back to the people.
You see all the time the tricks that they do, you know, because I'm definitely not against all politicians across the board.
Oh, no.
A lot of them have good intentions, and they get there and they find out how the game is really played.
And they play the game.
It's true. You hear politicians complain all the time that you know, the House will put down a bill that's, you know, 1,100 pages long and give them less than 2 hours to read it before they vote.
That's right. Because, go ahead. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, how are we supposed to get things done, you know, and expect them to be representing us as their constituents when they're not even sure what they're voting for?
No, they're not. They get the issue they want. They don't care what's in there. They're only getting what they want. You know, and just because they get what they want, the people do not know. They can go read for themselves. You know, the truth is to be tested. If you just accept a law, but you don't know what's attached to the law, and then the next thing you know, you're driving down the street and the guy tells you, you just broke the law. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about? You don't have the only way a minority can lead a majority is to keep you confused, uninformed, and divided. Where when information comes to you, you fight information, ideas, and the thinking and faces and origins of other people. It'll keep us divided. And we'll never be able to use the Constitution so that we can make a future for our children. It's not about us. See, people marched and died side by side, all people. It's not about a skin color. It's not about a Republican or a Democrat. That's nonsense. That's only things used to separate people so you cannot come together and be as one. We feed right into it because that's what we hear every day. They beat it into your head until you output it.
Yeah, and it's just accepted. It really is accepted. And as you explained it, it's inheritance. It's like we don't even have to think about it. Most, you know, we want to talk about the subject of racism, you know, and it really is. It's just people don't even realize that they're being racist. You know,
the second half of the show. I got something for you. Forget racist. That's a term used to separate.
Like you hear somebody say, "I'm not racist,"
yes.
But you know, and then there's always the but, you know, and it's like, well, you know, you just said something racist. Oh, that's not racist, you know, to say
because he only knows
a man or a woman because of their ethnicity, you know, but it is, and it's just inherently natural.
It's not racism that people have a problem with. It's people's perception. The information that they're outputting the decision on about whom a person is based on only of what he knows. If he doesn't have the correct information, it's impossible for him to output a correct behavior. It's the people are not racist. That's a term created. It's the perception of another person that a person has a problem with because he know that's not him.
Exactly. That's a good explanation.
It's the truth. Yes, sir. It's absolutely true because they use the word racism, and then to each individual person, it forms a picture in his mind of what it means. And to each individual, it can be different. So he said, I'm not that. And then the other person who's saying it, he thinks it's something else. So you can't come to any type of agreement on just that. How are you going to get together to sign a petition? It's got to be for the children. It's got to be for the future. If we can't do things for ourselves and unite on a cause that benefits us all, we're in trouble. It's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
It is going to get worse.
Is power.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that after it gets worse, it does get better, and I'm hoping that people like you and me and the listeners here tonight, you know, get involved with some of the activities that we got going on in our city.
Yes, sir. We got some great ones coming up, sir.
And I always want to encourage people to do it in their own cities and in their own neighborhoods, no matter how big or small your community is. I mean, if you stand on the corner with a sign, people are going to read it. And no matter where you're at, the majority of the time, there's, you know, enough people going around that will read that sign, and perhaps you can plant a seed and they'll go home and they'll investigate. And, you know, we got to start thinking outside the box.
Yes, sir, because, see, it's like-minded people like us that understand that there's 1,000 reasons why you can't do something. But, see, all you need is one reason why you can. Let's get to work. Let's stop making excuses. Let's stop complaining about what we can't do, and let's get something done. How we get something done? We come to the marches, right? How can you get along with the people who they say you can't? You can't get along with young people. That's a lie. That's something to keep you separated from them, thinking that they're not even approachable. So how can you communicate to come to an understanding? Because we all go through the same things. We all trying to pay the same bills. We all trying to pay the lights, the electric, the water. But they want to think you're different from one another. It's crazy. And they want to continue.
They've got us divided, like you said, by every avenue conceivable.
Yes, possible. It's ingrained so bad.
Yeah, it keeps us in our bubbles and in our own little collectives.
Yes, sir.
It stops us from getting together as one collective, as one voice. And I just want to mention real quick that I just want to mention real quick that I respect the anonymous movement. Quite a bit for that fact, you know, that they can come together as one voice. And, if you got a person standing in front of you speaking to you in a mask, you can't judge that person on anything other than his actions and his words. You can't, it takes that away from the initiative, you know. And I think that, you know, I got a lot of respect for the ideal of that movement, because it really does bring people together and for one cause and one voice, and it puts a hush to some of that division. Not all of it,
it gives
but
us, it gives us reasons to come together to find something to agree on so we can get something done. Okay, see, my past does not dictate who I am at the present. It only shows my experience and growth and what I've been through. See, I have a gift. And if this gift looks up in the sky and see a star, it will figure out how to get there. It has no limit to what it can do. If you don't believe it, go Google it and study the brain. And everybody's got one, and it works. If you think I can't do something, and I want to be a brain surgeon right now, I go down to the university, I enroll, find a way to get in. They give me the training and information, and I may be the best in the world. Everybody got one. The child got one. The woman got one. Come on. Everybody got one. And it works. They want you to think that something's wrong with the one you got. That's not true. You don't need a title. You don't need a – I met a gentleman at the march on the 1st of March. This gentleman spoke better than a professor. And I communicate with them frequently, with a doctor. This man doesn't even have a high school education, and he was impeccable and intelligent because his supercomputer works.
Yes, and it's almost like you have to unlock it, because it's been locked, and it's been locked down by suppression of knowledge, you know, by the schooling system, the education system sets us up to believe that what's in their textbooks is a reality.
Please go to Rabbi Finkelstein on YouTube, and he will tell you to your face, we created your public school system, and the reason we don't send our kids is because we want to teach ours the good stuff. I'm just telling you the truth. Let him tell you in his own words if you won't accept mine, and then go study what he says.
You know, another interesting subject that I'd like to touch on, it really boils down to a lot of, in my opinion, the the geoengineering programs and the way that they're dumbing us down. I mean,
it's scary to see. Yes.
How you know if you take if you actually take a step back and look at it, you know, from our perspective as awakened individuals, it's terrifying to look at how dumbed down they've become.
Oh wow! If you went to someone and gave them some information, they look at you like I can't believe. They won't tell you what they know; they'll tell you what they think. That's how good of a job they've done. You know, and it doesn't mean that we can't learn. It doesn't mean that something's wrong with us, and it doesn't mean that things can't change. See, they want you to think like this. I met a gentleman that marched with Martin Luther King in Atlanta, and I was talking about all the things I want to do to help the community. He said, look, you're going to meet this. You're going to meet people that tell you what you can't do. You're going to meet people that tell you that it's impossible. He said, Martin was like this. He said, I was on the mountaintop. He said, my eyes have seen it. He said, it was progress. That is the mountain. You don't have a mountain to climb. It's progress is the mountain. You move forward, and it's already there. You're in the promised land. All you got to do is change your mind, find something to agree on, and let's get to work.
And be the change that we seek in the world. You know,
come on,
I
man.
Say that
we
all
can
the
do
time. It's on
yeah.
us. You know, it's up to the individuals, you know, the people that's sitting back and waiting for the government to fix everything.
They're not going to fix it. They're out
of
control.
They
borrowed so much money.
Of time to make corrections.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So they are out of control. These people are crooks. These people are thieves.
And unprosecutable.
Unprosecutable. They have immunity from prosecution. Okay, are we ready to get into the second part about the brutality yet? Because I got some good stuff here for you. Okay,
sure, whatever
I want to go over this. I want to reemphasize that this is about sovereign immunity. And what sovereign immunity means is in your Constitution. Sovereign immunity, you can go Google it and Google sovereign immunity in the Constitution. It was meant for foreign countries. It was meant for people to have embassies in this country and us have embassy in other people's countries because America wants immunity because they go over there and they're trying to undermine and do stuff and people get killed and all type stuff and nobody can prosecute nobody. Okay, they have immunity, sovereign immunity. That means if I have an embassy in my house, that means I am not subject to the laws of the land or any constitution of the United States of America, period. You cannot prosecute me. Okay? Now, what they did with that sovereign immunity is they created a tort act in each state, okay? In each state, all 50. How can all of them have a tort act and all of them say the same thing, that all government employees, government officials, police officers, prison guards, whoever, there is no accountability. The attorney general in each state refused to prosecute from 85 to 99 to 100% of any violations of the constitutional or civil rights of any person in the United States. The reflection of that is the conduct of those who act with impunity is out of control. Did you know there was a report by Eastern Kentucky University? The report, you can contact Police Study Enrollment Advisor Allison Smuck. You can contact them. They did a research. Over 4,813 American people were killed in the process of being arrested for minor crimes, not felonies, not robberies in progress, not guys running around with knives trying to kill somebody. None of that. That's a whole different statistic for each one of them or more deaths. But 4,113 people, Americans, were killed by the police in Iraq from 2003 to 2009. That's just 3 years. In Iraq, the whole time we were in the war, it was only 3,500 and some odd killed in a, 12-year war? And in six years, they killed more Americans in the process of being arrested. So I'm not saying that the police are bad people. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all.
I'm not completely anti-police either. I'm not completely.
Me neither. I want to reemphasize. I want to set some standards here. I'm saying that if a person breaks the law, that he should be held accountable for his action. I don't care if you got on a badge. I don't care if you got on a roll. I don't care if you're the president of the United States. If you break the law and my son break the law and he got to be held accountable, so should you. You should be held accountable even more because of the oath you take of the people.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know,
even more. You should not get immunity.
Yeah, much more.
I mean, do you know that the tort act in each state, you can go in there and you can read how they're giving the corporations more and more and more immunity from prosecution. These are people who can make cars that kill people, and they're not held accountable or prosecuted. It's not because they can't. It's that they won't.
Right.
That's the sad part. It's out of control. Now, the way that you remedy these situations, I can tell you that. I'm just going to say one more thing. Now, if they killed 4,813 people from 2003 to 2009 at 6 years, imagine 60 years. You know how many people that is? That's almost 50,000 Americans killed by the people who are supposed to be protecting us, not for violent crime, not for robberies, none of that. Not being aggressive. This is in the process of being arrested.
They've got the American people convinced that it's necessary that they behave that way. You know,
I mean,
things are so bad here in this country. You know, they've got people so fear-mongered that they believe that, you know, that they're acting in their own safety. You know, you see news stories every day, and it's increasing daily. It seems like
without doubt
of unprosecuted police brutality.
And let me tell you how it's not prosecuted. Okay, in the Tort Act, here's what it says. It says that when a police officer, they pass the legislation, the council pass laws within the community, that sneak it in, okay? The police officer, okay, there's a murder. Somebody gets shot, right? Okay,
right.
He's got sovereign immunity. Check this out. Okay, there's no one's charged with a crime. There's an investigation. This is how it works. The police officer is waived to the grand jury. You know, the prosecutor presents him. He can prosecute him if he want to. It's never done, okay? Never in the whole United States of America, after thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of murder, they do not press charges. Check this out. They're allowed to sit on the grand jury during the indictment proceedings. This is not a court of law. It's not the same standard. There's no judge. There's no nothing, right? Okay, not even the majority have to, they only have to prove is reasonable doubt. Okay, they can be anybody off the street. They don't have to be a doctor, a lawyer, nobody. Okay, he's allowed to sit on the grand jury during the indictment proceedings, listening to all witness and evidence and testimony against him, with him and his witnesses and his lawyer. Check this out. Okay, he's allowed to leave. They're allowed to prepare their case, come back. They've already twisted the evidence because there's an investigation. The family never gets to know what happened to the victim, ever, until after the civil rights investigation by the government, which might be 2 years later. Okay? Nobody's allowed to know what happened except the police and the prosecutor and his friends. Okay? They get reasonable doubt. The legal system has already been undermined before it even gets to start. They put that in there. No lawyer is going to come on here and tell you what I'm telling you. They're not going to tell you, you know why I did this. My cousin's name was Tony Sullivan. He lived in Lexington, Kentucky. Okay? He came out of a closet with his hands up, and they shot him in the middle of his forehead. I was in the living room one day, and my auntie came into the room. And on the TV, on the news, it said the officer was not indicted. She fell in the floor screaming, why? How did he get away with it? For over 30 years, I've made it a mission to find out why. And this is for her, and this is for Tony.
okay, and all the countless of thousands and thousands of victims in the United States. Do you know it's not just black men they're killing? Okay?
Let's get that straight.
Out of those 4,000 and some, almost 2,000 of them are Caucasian gentlemen and young ladies. Do you know that there's even more cases that they refuse to even put on here because of different things? And then what about the cases that you don't hear about? Okay, now it's almost 6 years later. How many are dead already?
This is sad. This needs to stop. It's horrific. And the fact that it's just accepted.
It's accepted because of the lies. They're telling you they're here to protect and serve. Nobody's telling you how many they're killing. When your child goes out to the store, it might not come home. Let's get that straight. No matter where you live, because they're killing rich and poor. It is out of control. Sovereign immunity through tort acts, the legislature and the councils of each of these cities is out of control. The government has no accountability for its actions. So if you don't have accountability, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. And it's showing up in the people dying. I don't have to accuse anybody of anything. Look at the evidence. What you can do is you can go and Google under the color of law, police brutality. You can go to statistics and graphs. You can put on the graphs. It will give you all the statistics that you could ever need to find out what the hell is really going on. And sovereign immunity goes beyond just the police. It's prison guards, government employees. When the founders created sovereign immunity, it wasn't meant for all that. It wasn't meant for the government to act and do whatever it wants to do and have immunity from prosecution, to be above the Constitution and all laws. Did you know that the Congress has the Senate, the Republicans, and everybody are listed as a corporation? And the Constitution in its article says that if you are listed as a corporation, all the laws you make are null and void. You cannot, it's like serving two masters. You either serve the people or you serve a corporation. They're trying to serve both, and it's not working.
Definitely. You know, and people are becoming more aware, you know.
Come on, man. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, people are starting to become more aware. And, you know, and that's something, that, again, that the media is not covering anything. And, you know, we do the March Against Mainstream Media, I believe, April the 18th here locally in Cincinnati.
Yes,
I advise everybody to get involved with that. Yes, I was going to ask you, do you want to mention the upcoming event here on the 15th? You want to plug
yes, sir,
that?
I do. That's what this whole speech is about the murders. That's just one statistic. They have a statistic for every category as far as dealing with police arrests. But on March 15th, we're having a march against police brutality, okay? We're going to have the pictures of faces of young men. We're inviting all groups and mothers. I watched the show. Well, there was a mother on there who recently had her son killed by the police, and she was crying, saying, where is the people who will speak for us? Do you know I am not even allowed to know what happened to my son? This is a mother. A mother's pain is different from a man's pain. Because
indeed,
that child, in order for her to bring a life into this world, she has to experience the pain of the living death. That means she know what it's like to die, to bring a life into this world. So it's precious to her because she endured so much. She is our greatest gift. And for us to abandon her and tell her it's okay to suffer through our silence, because silence only gives it a permission to continue and get worse. We're not saying the police is bad. We're saying that if you commit a crime, no matter who you are, that you should be held accountable for your action if the evidence show that you did not do your job and you did something else. Okay? So it can stop. So it can decrease. 5,000 people killed, not being arrested, not who in suspicion of committing a crime, in 6 years is too dang gone many. I don't care what you say, any way you wrap it.
And it's time for people to get excited. It's time for people to get out there and start to do, you know, we can't sit around and let others do it for us. It's time for us to do community action projects. And, you know, it's on us, the people, to get this stuff done. And, you know,
1,000% I'm with you.
Yeah. So, again, on the 15th, that is the global day to march against police brutality. And we're hoping to raise awareness.
Yes, sir. We want to give you a platform. You know, the mother said that her voice, she don't have a voice. She can't be heard. She just needs to let it out. She needs some understanding. That's all she needs. She don't need you to beat up the police, attack the police. She just needs somebody to say it's not right. It's not right what's going on. The tort acts, which the people can stop, okay? It will stop them from wanting to kill somebody just because they're angry and upset about something else or something that they don't like. If you do that and the evidence show you commit a crime, you should be held accountable for your actions, just like me, just like you. If you drive down the street and get pulled over and sign a ticket, once you sign that ticket, they say...
Hello? Hello?
He just dropped out.
Oh, no, we lost him. Okay, he will be back on. I know you mentioned me here in the technical that I was intending to squeeze him in just in the last few minutes, the last 20 minutes of the show, only for the police brutality and the mention of the rally coming up here local in Cincinnati, the global march against police brutality. I also want to mention real quick that all of this will be archived and available on the official Facebook page for later listening. If you want to listen in, catch up on some of the conversation and show today. He's a great guy. He's a great motivational speaker. I'm actually planning to start another nonprofit with him. We can't mention anything just yet, great guy. We're going to have him back on. He will actually be the guest for an entire show. We're going to talk about some different subjects and give you updates on some of the events and rallies that we mentioned here tonight. He will be back on, and that will be the 20th. That will be the third show here of the month. So we look forward to that. He's a great speaker. I want to close here with a little bit. I have another event that I would like to plug that's coming up here on the 22nd of March, and we're doing this here in Cincinnati. I was hoping he could help me plug it. He's actually kind of in on planning it. It's kind of his ideal. It's the Walk for Humanity, March 22nd at 2 p.m. It begins at Pyatt Park in Cincinnati. And we're basically just going to walk, for humanity, you know, and all of the different causes that we promote here at Awaken Cincinnatians and through the Anonymous Movement and through the Occupy Cincinnati Movement, you know. And we just, you know, we got a lot of great things coming up. We got Mike Hahn is the CEO of Charity Media Cincinnati. He comes out and he films for us videos that are loaded YouTube, and then we of course post them to the show Facebook page. We have other features as well on the Facebook page, and of course the show will always be archived there. And that again is Decide for Yourself with Clint Croucher. It's searchable in the Facebook search engine. We hope that you follow the page, like the page, share the page. We're doing a lot of promotions on Facebook for the show. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you get out there and fight with us. The fight is in the streets, and I truly believe that together we can, my friends. Together we can. Let's get out there. Let's make this happen. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you again next week. Same day, same time. Have a good night.